Today's June 16, 2015. This is Joint Committee on Ways and Means, Subcommittee on Natural Resources. Today we have three public hearings on House Bill 2633, Senate Bill 94, Senate Bill 912, and a work session on House Bill 3563. We're going to start off in the order. However, we have a couple of representatives that will be popping in, and we'll probably open up work sessions to accommodate them. So we'll start off opening a work public hearing on House Bill 2633. I'll turn it over to Mr. Stainer.
Good morning, Co-Chair Rayfield, members of the subcommittee. Our first bill up today is House Bill 2633, and I'll just give you a quick summary of the bill. The bill would require the Department of Land Conservation and Development to adopt administrative rule in conjunction with existing statewide land use planning goals, providing guidance to local governments addressing potential risks associated with development areas susceptible to coastal erosion, landslides, and tsunamis. The bill also requires DLCD, in coordination with the Office of Emergency Management, to establish a program to provide guidance to local governments regarding the identification of and planning practices for mitigating impacts of development in natural hazard areas, and appropriates $50,000 general fund for that purpose. The measure specifically exempts local governments and special districts from being required to follow the planning practices developed by the program, and it's not clear if the program is intended to be a continuing program or just a single limited duration project. The measure requires DLCD to consult with a number of other agencies, including local governments, the Federal Emergency Management Agency, or FEMA, the Office of Emergency Management, the State Department of Geology and Mineral Industries, for both of the activities required under the bill. There is a fiscal impact issued for the measure, but it's somewhat indeterminate, and the reason is there's a open-ended nature of the program is one of the pieces. There's also whether or not there's landowner notifications that need to be sent out. There's a cost associated with that. There's also a workload issue at Department of Land Conservation and Development. There's a number of bills that are still in play that that may impact the ability of DLCD to get this work done.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Stainer. We'll go ahead and call up Representative Leiniger. And Senator Denver, would you also like to come up and testify?
I can just stay here, and I'll, okay. I'll just supplement the representative's comments.
Thank you, Chair Rayfield and members of the committee. I'm pleased to be here today. I grew up in Southern Oregon. Some of you know that. On a hill overlooking the town of Ashland, it was a dry hill, a dirt road, that had oil for fire suppression in an abandoned apple orchard. It was very dry in the summer, and I remember one time when I was a kid, there was a wildfire coming up the hill, and there was only one way down from the from our house, and it was on this dirt road. There was a wildfire coming up the hill, and it was unclear what was going to happen, and my mom said to my brother and me, and I must have been 5 or 6 years old, and she was home with us. My dad wasn't there. She said, you know, and kids, if I tell you that we're going to do it, we're going to jump in the car and we're going to drive as fast as we can down that road. And it was a really scary experience, and thankfully it worked out okay. But growing up in Southern Oregon, you have a keen sense of the risk of wildfire in Oregon. And I know that all of us have gotten a keen sense of it in the last few years. In the last 2 years, I understand that we've spent $60 million in general fund money, more than we had expected to fight wildfires. We have an additional $30 million in our insurance premium for Lloyd's of London by virtue of the increased deductible that we have now. 19 of our counties have been declared drought counties, and in an Oregonian story published on May 19th, they said this year's wildfire season is expected to start earlier, last longer, due to diminished snowpacks and warmer temperatures. And last wildfire season, just the same Oregonia story said the Northwest spent $460 million fighting wildfires. So the risk, the natural hazard risk of fighting wildfires is profound and is persisting. House Bill 2633 would address that risk and a number of other natural hazard risks by directing DLCD to complete a rulemaking that they're already required by law to undertake, but have not yet gotten around to undertaking. It would direct them to complete a rulemaking within the next 2 years on how communities should should consider natural hazards when they're doing their periodic comprehensive plan updates. It doesn't require anyone to redo the comprehensive plan. It just provides some flesh on the bones of an existing statute. It's the one of the goals that doesn't have implementing regulations to help communities know what they're supposed to think about when they're thinking about minimizing risks. It's a planning tool. It is not a prohibition of development tool. It's a how can we develop in a way that makes sense using parameters like, all right, we're going to identify safe exit routes in a tsunami zone. We're going to use fire-resistant materials and clear a brush perimeter around structures in very dry areas. We're going to design buildings to reasonably resist earthquake. We're going to site our emergency transportation lifelines, hopefully in places that won't be inundated during floods or impassable because of landslides. It's a practical common sense planning tool, not a prohibition tool that they're already obligated to do rulemaking on but have not had an opportunity to get to yet, and it covers these natural hazards. Goal 7 does. Floods, landslides, earthquakes, tsunamis, coastal erosion, and wildfire. Now, during the committee process, we worked very hard with a wide group of stakeholders to pass this this bill out of committee with all yes votes and one no vote. And it was a bipartisan committee, and we had bipartisan support. And one of the ways that we did that, with great help from Representative Clem, I want to thank you, is by negotiating, and great help from Sean Gillians, too, negotiating with the home builders and the realtors and Oregonians in Action and the Farm Bureau and the cities and counties in order to craft a package that everyone could live with. And what that looks like is this. There would be best practice guidance developed as to a certain number of the hazards. It's non-binding best practice guidance. And then as to others of the hazards, coastal erosion, landslides, and tsunamis, there would be rulemaking. This would be done by 2 years from the effective date. This doesn't preclude rulemaking on the other issues. It just says that we're going to, by 2 years from the effective date, we're going to get done rulemaking on these three issues, coastal erosion, landslides, and tsunamis, and also best practice guidance on wildfire, earthquake, and flooding, how you minimize risk, protect human life. Again, it's a planning tool, not a prohibition tool, but I think it's an important step, and we've worked hard to get bipartisan support, and I hope you'll support it. Thanks.
All right, and then we also have Representative Gomberg and Senator Dembro, who are also chief co-sponsors.
I'll start up. Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Leininger brought this bill to me last year while I was still the chair of the Environment and Natural Resources Committee. And we had, and Senator Hansel will remember this, I was the chair at the time that terrible tragedy up in Washington State happened, the landslide that buried the town of Oso. And we soon after had Dogami come in and give us a presentation on landslides and natural hazards and the way that they're able to use their LIDAR technology to pinpoint vulnerable areas. I was very impressed. And, you know, that's where I first learned that the best way to predict where a landslide will come is by looking at where landslides have been. And the LIDAR technology gives us the ability to do that, to, you know, really look at the historical record going back, you know, many thousands of years to where landslides have happened. And it was sobering, I have to say, to see, you know, many parts of our state where there is landslide potential very close to residential areas. And it just made a lot of sense, especially given the experience up in Oso, where the immediate reaction afterwards, you know, that we heard was, why wasn't there better planning done to prepare us for this kind of thing or to avoid some of the residences being built where they were? And so, you know, the notion that, you know, we here in the state do have this, the resource of our DCLD to be able to do this kind of planning and to or at least to create the structures for local governments to do the planning I mean, it's a resource that we should take advantage of as much as possible. When we heard the department's budget, and we passed the department's budget, it was discouraging to see that, they had hoped for an increase in their local planning grants. We weren't able to do those. Hopefully, we will in the future be able to increase their budget to provide local governments with more resources. But at least as an interim step, it makes a lot of sense for us to get this rulemaking done so that we're prepared to help those local jurisdictions do the kind of planning that I think we all agree needs to be done. I just saw in the paper this morning that we are looking at a very strong El Nino year this year, and that it has a lot of potential for doing damage to the coast. And we need to be prepared for that kind of thing. So I certainly support this modest investment.
Representative Gumbert.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, everybody else. I apologize for being a few minutes late. I was caught in another meeting, which everybody understands this time of year. I'm not going to repeat everything that's already been said today. There's been some good comments made. Representative Leininger was kind enough to bring me this bill at the beginning of session. And being from the coast, we certainly have our concerns, whether it be landslides, fires, flooding, whether it be tsunamis, whether it be earthquakes. Planning is a good thing for us. And so that's why I was happy to get involved with this piece of legislation. And that's not only because we're in a natural area that may well be subject to a number of those different kinds of challenges, but also because of the nature of our geography, we're in a potential to be cut off from community to community to community, and that's of concern to us. And finally, the fact that that so many of your constituents come out to spend time with us. And there's no way of knowing whether one of these unfortunate events might take place when there's a lot of visitors at the coast. It's going to be a huge concern to everyone. Now, that being said, the Coastal Caucus certainly has some concerns, as I think Representative Leininger highlighted, that we be looking at planning and not prohibitions. And that's of concern to us because we don't need agencies coming in and saying you can't put hotels within sight of the ocean, you can't put marine science centers near the water, you can't put hatcheries near the rivers. We've got some concern about prohibition issues, but planning is a good thing, and so I'm glad we've got this bill before us.
Are there any questions?
Yes, Representative Clement.
Just my comment that we had also a work group in the House committee that lasted quite a long time to get to the consensus in this bill. And I think actually I was gone a lot dealing with a natural hazard of my own.
Oh, yeah.
I'm in Quad River, so I didn't go to a lot of the meetings, but it was a good package, and I'm pleased to support the bill.
Are there any other questions? All right, seeing none, thank you, Representative Leininger. We'll go ahead and call up Aaron Doyle and Peggy Lynch.
Good morning, Co-Chair Rayfield, members of the committee. For the record, Aaron Doyle on behalf of the League of Oregon Cities, here to talk about House Bill 2633 and some of our concerns based on how the budget process has played out. We support having clear and direct guidance from DLCD when we're trying to meet our statewide land use planning goals, when we're doing that statewide, when we're trying to meet those planning requirements as we go forward. And natural hazards is, of course, something that has come very much to the top of the list of things that maybe has been less prioritized in the past as we've been trying to do urbanization, how we're going to deal with UGBs and things of that manner. But we're now learning that there's more and more science out there to explain what those hazards are going to look like. But we're also dealing with a complicated this is a terrible pun, and I apologize in advance, shaky ground of what we do know and what we don't know. And so one of the reasons why we were neutral on 2633, and I think we kind of remain so, is because we were assuming that we were going to get some of the resources in the DLCD budget that were through the policy option packages that we did not get. And the first and primary one of those is POP 101, which would have provided an extra half million dollars to the general grants fund. And as a member of the General Grants Advisory Committee, one of the things that we had a long discussion about is how we prioritize how those grants are allocated and what types of projects they're allocated to. And for the first time ever, that committee recommended to the LCDC or the commission that natural hazards be added to that list, and not just added at the bottom, but added in towards the top. Those grants are supposed to be directed at economic development, and obviously having good natural hazards planning is going to help with that, because you're building things so that they're resilient. But that additional money wasn't put into their budget, which means that there's less resources out there for us to add this component into our comprehensive plan. And of course, if you open up a comprehensive plan, that's a big onerous task for any one of our cities or any one of our counties. In addition, we had supported POP 107, which would have added extra personnel to DLCD to help us with that land or that natural hazard planning by bringing in actual staff to do that community outreach and working with us. In addition, kind of looking at where we are with Dogami, which is not a budget that I testified on and I followed because we are users of Dogami science. In looking at where their science is compared to where House Bill 2633 would need us to be, I remain a little bit concerned. First, there's the issue of Dogami needing the resources to actually set the tsunami inundation line that they've had recommended to them for 2 years. They have been unable to complete that public process in adopting what they're calling the L line or the large line based on t-shirt sizes. I'm hoping that their budget now covers that and will allow them to finish that process, so that way we have knowledge of where it is that we're trying to build out the most resilience too. In addition, in looking at their key performance measures number 1, 3, and 12, I'll talk about where they are in all of the science to talk about landslide mapping, coastal erosion mapping, and geologic hazard preparedness outreach to communities. And they're currently at below 100% coverage on the mapping. With the earthquake and landslide in particular, they're currently at 62%, and their goal over the course of the biennium is to get to 70%, which will make it very difficult for us and for those communities that are susceptible to landslides. If they're not mapped and there's new rules, how do we meet those requirements under the rules? So I think at this point, we're hoping to see less money go toward rulemaking and more money going towards actual planning. And would it support POPs 107 and 101 being refunded, if possible, this late in the game? I know we can't do it through POPs, but maybe some other way. To allow us to use those monies to prioritize land use planning in those areas where they know the unknowns, the unknowable potential natural disasters. For example, the DLCD has created a tsunami guidance document that is directed for local governments to use as a resource. And some of our communities are already using that document as a jumping off point to figure out what they need to do. And I think more interactions like that, where DLCD can become an assistant to that process and help us figure out how it is that we should be doing our land use planning. Maybe it doesn't need rules, but using that document and setting up those types of pilot projects would assist us in actually getting the planning accomplished. And finally, one other thing that has been kicked around, as some of us have talked about how tsunami planning needs to go forward, one of the things that DLCD has done in the past related to other issues is created model codes, essentially. Instead of doing firm rulemaking and setting guidelines, they've done model codes that then local governments could say, well, I'm interested in doing some code development or planning related to this project. Can you help us out? And the department can turn around and say, we have this model code. Now let's make it work for your community. And I think projects like that will be far more effective at getting tsunami planning and coastal erosion planning done in places where maybe they're not, you know, fully mapped out, or the line hasn't been adopted and they can work from there. But if rulemaking is going to happen, I think it'll help our communities in the long run. We need to make sure that it's fully funded, not just for the portion of the rulemaking, but also the technical work that's going to have to happen at the local level. And $50,000 is a drop in the bucket of what it's going to take for all of our coastal communities to really get this done, just for the coastal erosion and tsunami planning that seems to be weighing on everyone's mind. With that, I'm happy to answer any questions and appreciate the time.
Ms. Lynch.
Peggy Lynch, League of Women Voters of Oregon. The League of Women Voters is a nonpartisan grassroots political organization that encourages informed and active participation in government. We have studied land use planning, and we're supportive of our state land use planning with local implementation. We also have a comprehensive position adopted in 1995 on hazards and seismic risks. So these two positions come together as we talk about this particular issue of increasing threat of floods, landslides, and other natural hazards. I was interested in hearing the representative's personal story about her living in Ashland. I lived between Highway 36, between Eugene and Florence on Highway 36. If anybody has ever driven Highway 36, the threat of landslides is constant. And frankly, flooding is also a major issue in that area with the Sayus Law and Lake Creek and other areas. In my high school years, I was confined. We were confined to our home for over a week because of landslides and flooding issues that we couldn't get out from our home. So it's not unlike the Vernonia story that you've heard about in the past. With the effects of our changing climate on our landslide becoming of our landscape becoming more and more serious, it's time to work together to develop rules to guide our state and local governments as they address these serious public safety issues. These are serious public safety issues that we cannot ignore. We agree with Aaron that we supported POP 101 and POP 107, would love to have had those two funded, but this is another opportunity for you to take a look at that opportunity to fund for this particular important issue. We believe that rulemaking can begin on this issue in 2016 after DLCD completes the work on the UGB streamlining work that is being done today, and that the need for local government assistance grants would not occur until 2017. So we see the fact that you can time this as being something that you could support. We ask that you support this. We believe that the landslide issue in Oso, Washington, we have seen those happen here in Oregon. The recent floods in southeast Texas, they never expected ever to have had what they saw as a 500-year flood, which may not be the case anymore. So we need to address this issue. We support the bill, and we hope that you can find some money to fund it.
Okay, before we ask questions, I'm going to go ahead and also open up a hearing on Senate Bill 94 because we have several people who want to testify on both of those issues. So I'll turn over to Mr. Stainer. Let's introduce Senate Bill 94.
Mr. Co-Chair, members of the subcommittee, if we wait just one moment, I'm hoping that the analyst that's covering Senate Bill 94. Oh, wait. I do have it. I'm sorry. I think we switched.
Well, he just showed
excellent.
Up.
Hey, look at that.
And he just showed up. Great.
Here I am. All right. So 94. Sorry, I was in the middle of Ms. Lynch's testimony.
Thank you for listening.
It was enthralling.
All right. So Measure 94A, thank you for your patience, requires that the Land Conservation Development Commission to either through rule or goal amendment to require tsunami zone communities to plan and zone to minimize the impact of tsunami inundation. It requires the Office of Emergency Management to enter into price agreements for heavy lift helicopter as specified. It permits local contracting agencies and local government to contract helicopter under the price agreement, and it sets the operative date of January 1st, 2016. It also directs the Oregon Homeland Security Council to identify certain energy infrastructure vulnerabilities and to make recommendations, permits the emergency preparedness agencies and local governments to establish partnerships to evaluate, plan, and finance alternatives with regard to fuel in the event of a disaster, and authorizes local governments to issue revenue bonds and to make loans to private entities. It allows the Homeland Security Council to impose requirements on financing methods, and it declares an emergency effective on passage.
We'll begin once again in the spirit of efficiency, and we'll get to that after they get done testifying.
Co-Chair Rayfield, again, Aaron Doyle with the League of Oregon Cities. Just much of my comments on Senate Bill 94 are the same as my comments on House Bill 2633. But something that Ms. Lynch said did trigger a thought that I had meant to get out on 2633, but it's focused on flooding and actually how that ground is shifting even further on us, given that the federal government is now looking at how the Endangered Species Act is going to affect how our National Flood Insurance Program is working. And until NOAA adopts a biological opinion, FEMA can't adjust its regulations of our floodplain areas, and therefore we have no idea what we're going to be required to do. I know that the state's been working with the federal government as much as the federal government will allow them to, which is very limited in scope, to try and figure out what it is that floodplain management looks like. But again, for the tsunami planning, I think that there's a lot of things that we can be doing. I think Senate Bill 94 includes a lot of those things in sections 2 through 4. But again, without the resources there, with both of the departments that will be most heavily, or all three of the departments that are most heavily impacted by that planning, we're cautiously concerned, but willing to help as if rulemaking should move forward, but want to guard our resources very carefully. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Doyle.
Peggy Lynch, League of Women Voters. We supported the original Senate Bill 94. The League of Women Voters of Oregon believes that all levels of government share the responsibility of coordinating, implementing, and funding an effective program to mitigate Oregon's earthquake and tsunami hazards. Priority must be given to mitigation that protects human life and safeguards critical life support systems. When citing critical facilities, tsunami run-up and inundation, as well as seismic factors such as severe ground shaking, liquefaction, massive landslide potential, and subsistence, should be considered. and that comes from our positions. The other issues in Senate Bill 94 that were added, we have no specific position on, except to say that Oregon has a responsibility to for the public safety of its citizens. And if, in fact, the issues, the requests for equipment in the rest of Senate Bill 94 are things that the state and the Office of Emergency Management feel are critical to the public safety of Oregonians, then they should be considered by this body. Thank you.
All right, Representative Parrish.
Thank you. Aaron, this is really a question for you. Because when I read this bill, I'll be honest, I have a little bit of a gut check philosophical about blanket rulemaking by an agency without a real good process to come back to us. And one of the things that strikes me, and you know, I'm on the Emergency Management Committee, have been for 5 years, and in another universe, you know, my husband spent 17 years with the Guard, and those phone calls as an officer came into our house. There's a flood on the coast. There's a flood at Vernonia. There is a fire somewhere out in Southern Oregon where the town of Merrill is without water. The interesting thing about that experience, from my point of view, is that all of those situations were very unique, very local to the sort of the terrain and the issues that face that individual community. And I see blanket rulemaking for something that looks, you know, has such high individual community needs as being potentially problematic. Like, one size fits all doesn't fit all in emergency planning. And I'd like your thoughts around that, because when I read this, that's what I see. And having had that viewpoint for 17 years of watching those phone calls come in and helping try to get soldiers, you know, food at the coast when they're, you know, my brother was out sandbagging the Tillamook as part of the Guard, you know, in the Tillamook floods. In 96, like, I've seen those things and lived them up close and personal. And I just think that blanket rulemaking from a state agency, when all of those issues really are very local and not homogenous, I'd like your thoughts on that.
Co-Chair Rayfield, Representative Parrish, I agree wholeheartedly that each of our communities knows its community better than blanket rulemaking can provide. We often deal with, in the land use world, blanket rulemaking kind of that says that all shall be done this way. When we've worked with the department in rulemaking, we do our best to take that into account and leave as much control and authority and consideration for the local planners and local legislative bodies and our city councils, and or, you know, we even support when the counties are doing it in their areas, that they be the ones to make the final determination. And that's part of the reason why I think that the science needs to come first in these instances. The mapping needs to be done and mostly completed, so that way if there are going to be rules that are going to guide us, that they're broad enough that they allow that flexibility, so that they're more that you should, you know, but the concern is, how do you draft those rules? Of course, some communities, the disasters that they're looking at are not coastal erosion. That's oddly only going to happen on the coast. Wildfires are another big issue in a very different area of the state. And we're very cautious whenever DLCD is doing the rulemaking. We participate very heavily for the reasons that you're talking about it needs to be local in the end. But at the same time, our reservations at this point related to this bill are, we trust the rulemaking process to the extent we trust any rulemaking process. But that without the science that Dogami is doing and needs to complete related to coastal erosion is almost done, but landslide mapping, the geologic hazard preparedness things, those are very far from being completed across the state. And without that information, even if there are rules in place, we have no ability to implement them until that LIDAR project is complete for landslide mapping for that particular community. Some might be able to go forward, but it really has to be very specific to the maps that are drawn for the area. Floodplain management is another example of that. In some cities, it's going to be fairly simple to curb development in the floodplain because that's what they've already done. But some of our cities, if you say you can't build in the floodplain, you can't build in the city because the city was built up along the river. Some of the things that we've been looking at with FEMA have been that you can't redevelop if a disaster should strike if you're in the floodplain. Well, that washes out all of Nehalem's downtown if something were to happen. So we can't take on big, broad brush rules that tell us too much, given that each of our communities looks so very different. So if there is rulemaking to go forward, it has to be at a high enough and broad enough scope that it gives us a general direction but doesn't tell us what the outcomes have to be, because it won't work for every community if those are the rules that we end up with. I know that I've worked with the department on other rulemaking, and that's not generally where they end up. It's not very specific like that, but I would be very concerned if it did get that specific.
So, Representative Parrish, just to respond to that as well, since I have participated in rulemaking at DLCD for a number of years, the League believes that we have a statewide program with local implementation. We feel very strongly about that. We have no concern that this rulemaking would not address the local opportunities to deal with this. The urgency is there, and if 60% to 70% of Dogami's information exists, then in those areas where that information exists, those communities can go forward. They actually already are beginning to go forward. But I just want to address the concern that, in fact, we do believe it's local implementation.
All right, and with that, I know you have a follow-up. We have a lot to do on our agenda, so we're going to need to keep moving. So thank you very much for your time, and we'll call up Representative Boone. Good morning.
Good morning, Chair Rayfield and committee. Nice to see you all. I was freaking out a little bit because I was in my own sub, and we had a series of work sessions, too, scheduled for the same time, so this is perfect timing. For the record, Deborah Boone, House District 32, and I'm here to talk to you about Senate Bill 94. And this was just a little tiny bit of background. This bill was started out as a placeholder bill. It was introduced as a committee bill, and even though I'm not a senator, we have had a joint committee during the interim, so this is why it ended up being a Senate bill, and it became kind of a catch-all bill at the end. But the important piece of it, there were two or three things that came out of the Oregon Resilience Plan that were incorporated into this bill, and one was to address the liquid fuel tanks, and most notably the ones in Linton in the Portland area, which are the four-day liquid fuel supply for our state. And at any time, these tanks can be very full or they can be very empty, but they're constantly being filled up and emptied, and they sit on what amounts to basically little cement pier blocks. And that's somewhat of an exaggeration, I suppose, but because they're so big. But the point is if they go down in an earthquake, they will spill all their fuel into the river, and that's a really bad thing. So we were looking at ways, they're privately owned too, for the most part. We're looking for ways that we could get them seismically upgraded if possible, and without mandating a private company to do such a thing. We looked at another bill that came out of the Oregon Resilience Plan, which was Senate Bill 85, and that was an upgrading planning bill, if you will, for historic building, most of which are brick or masonry, and they're very, very susceptible to damage or complete destruction in an earthquake. And they came up with, in that bill, Senate Bill 85, kind of City of Portland came forward and joined with the group, and I can't remember the official name, but they're the group of people who own the historic buildings, you know, downtown Portland. All of our communities probably have them, courthouses, et cetera. They're older buildings. They were not built to withstand earthquakes. And they devised some really innovative and collaborative public-private partnerships for funding, including grants, loans, et cetera. And that being said, that idea or model was brought into this for same use with these tanks. Another piece of this is a heavy lift helicopter, and this was an amendment from Senator Olson, and he actually started out with a separate bill, and then it was amended into this bill because it made sense at this point. And that was that the military would agree, and it's a small print, I'm going to have to look here. It says it directs the Office of Emergency Management to enter into a price agreement for heavy lift helicopters when necessary, permits the office on behalf of local government to enter into contracts with contractor for services. This is if, you know, in the event of all the roads and bridges are out and we need to get supplies in or move people in or out, we're going to need all the help we can get. And so Senator Olson came up with this idea, and I think if you haven't already heard it from Oregon Emergency Management, they're part of this arrangement as well. And the sorry, I have eye problems with these glasses. The first part of the bill directing Homeland Security Council to identify energy infrastructure vulnerabilities, that sort of goes in, oh, they're going to fall off. And to the, I really didn't plan this entertaining feature of this. That goes in with the start of all of these things, that to identify infrastructure vulnerabilities. This plan, the getting back without going through the whole emergency plan process with the Oregon Resilience Plan, they looked at a lot of different things from 8 or 9 different sectors, and we needed to get more than one thing into this bill, so we kind of cobbled it all together at the end. That being said, we have, I think it were 110 recommendations. We had about 8 bills this session. So you can see this is a 50-year process. We're not going to make it all in one time, but these were the most important components of the plan that needed to happen sooner than later, and especially when you think of liquid fuels. And so that's what this is about, and hopefully you will pass this, or you aren't passing today, but hopefully you'll hold a work session and get this going. There's a very small fiscal with it, and when I talked to the fiscal staff, it was more about the cost of notifying neighbors for any action that's done that you have to do for planning. And then finally, I wanted to mention on Senate Bill 94 and the 2633, the component of planning. I know that Lincoln County has submitted testimony via OLIS for you, and from Anna Husing, Director of Lincoln County Planning and Development Department. And I spoke with him last night because I heard that they had some issues with the shall do this rulemaking versus a may. And the thing I wanted to tell you about, and I know that you have it on OLIS at some point, he provided a link. It's called the Preparing for DLCD. Developed a 100-page report. It's called Preparing for a Cascadia Subduction Zone Tsunami, a land use guide for Oregon coastal communities. And this is an effort of a little bit longer than what we use in, you know, building up our bills and a couple of hearings in this process. And when I talked with Mr. Husing, he suggested that we use that as a guide and let it get going a little bit. It's just come out in the last month or so. Correct me if I'm wrong from behind, but it's a document that's to be used to find out how we can go ahead with these things. So if this were changed to do a may instead of a shall, I don't have a problem with that. And I think it's a good idea because this is a product of a lot of thoughtful work on the part of the department. And the last speaker who talked about, I think LOC talked about, one size does not fit all when you're talking about these things, and that's very important to the coast because you're absolutely right. We're different than the east side of Senator Hansel's district, for example. So I'd be happy to answer any questions. I know this is a little bit convoluted type of bill, but it's important that we get this through because of what we're going to be facing, and it's just monumental.
All right. Thank you, Representative. Any questions?
Yeah. So, Rep. Boone, in the 2633, so with the shall, is that, do you think that's constrictive for your community, that they're going to sort of do it the way?
And Representative Pierce, she's here testifying on Senate Bill 94.
Well, she mentioned 2633.
I just want to make sure it's very clear that she's only here testifying on Senate Bill 94, mm-hmm. but please go ahead.
But she referenced 2633, so I want to follow up with that.
If I were to say that, I agree with what was said in the former speaker from LOC, is that things are different, and utilizing local knowledge, et cetera. I can't say that a shall would be constrictive, but I think it's always good to use your local knowledge and local experience. And I think that we're really used to working with this department. They've done a great job, and LIDAR mapping was referenced. I've been working on this issue since I came here in 2004, and basically before that when I just was attending meetings about these things. And so all of our planning processes along the coast have included all kinds of components for this, the mapping, the LIDAR mapping, seafloor mapping, all kinds of things that are addressing this issue. If it were to be a shell, that's fine too. I just want to get it done. We just want to get it done. And you know what? When all is said and done, I trust the agencies who we have working for us. These people are amazing, and they've been there, and some of them as long as I have. So, I do trust them.
Thank you, Representative.
Mr.
Actually, we do need to keep moving. So, a quick question.
It's not a question. Just a point that Senate Bill 94 does have mandatory rulemaking. Mm-hmm. By a couple of agencies here. So.
Okay, thank you very much, Representative.
Thank you.
And just for everybody, I'm going to ask that everybody keep their testimony as concise as possible, as once this we reach 9:45, the public hearings will be over, and we're going to move to our work session. So I'd like to move as quickly as possible. We're going to continue on House Bill 2633. We'll go ahead and call up Jonathan Manton and Eric Kanzler.
Thank you, Co-Chair Rayfield and members of the committee. My name is Jonathan Manton, and I'm testifying today on behalf of Central Oregon Land Watch. We are a small nonprofit located in Central Oregon advocating for conservation side land use planning and sustainable communities in Central Oregon especially. I was able to testify in support of this bill of 2633 in its committee of origin, but because of the amendment that has been made that takes out wildfire in Section 2 of the bill, I'm here today to oppose them and hope that we can fix that. What I have on the screen today is an image of the Two Bulls wildfire that was in Central Oregon last year. This is June of last year, just 1 year from today. And you can see in red, that's the outline of the fire. And just to the east of the fire there is the city of Bend. So it gives you a little just perspective of like how large that fire was. It was about 7,000 acres, about 50 homes were evacuated, and growing in that area of Bend now poses threats. And I think that image is pretty graphic. There's another fire happening right now outside of Medford, and this bill is very, very important. The planning processes need to take place around natural hazards, and it's wonderful that we're doing this. I grew up, you know, or I lived in Bend for a while there. I remember where I was when that fire broke out in Bend. I'm looking for a home on the coast now. So these natural hazards are such that we need to be doing this. This is very valuable work, and very much support the efforts that have gone into this. But I'm here today to ask for leadership, frankly, because this needs to go back into this bill. That is a scary situation, and we need not just guidance, but this needs to be included in the rulemaking. It's a natural hazard. We're facing it every day out there. It's going to get worse. So I'm here today to ask you to put wildfire back into Section 2. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Manton. Mr. Kissinger.
For the record, Eric Kanzler, representing the City of Bend. I don't know if ironic is the right word, but our interest in the bill pertains specifically to wildfire as well, and is also a position that's been taken based on great concern about wildfire. Our position on the bill is different than Mr. Manton's client's position on this bill, I think for a good reason. We had worked with all of the parties that were processed to shaping this bill in the policy committee, and one of the reasons why wildfire was taken out wasn't dismissive, frankly, at all. It was in an effort to make deliberate and considerate progress on something that we see as a very real issue. If you ask Bend's planners, who are very concerned and very diligent in working and planning for this issue, you know, what do you want to do with this bill? You know, at first they saw it and they saw rulemaking and wildfire and thought, wow, this is, you know, we are wholly surrounded by wildfire risk. We're concerned about taking on a rulemaking process before we really know what we need to know about wildfire. If you ask them also, they'll say there is an incredible lack of expertise on the issue. There's a lot of work going into, you know, surveying potential best management practices, science going into figuring out what communities should do, and it's getting to a point where what we think is the most fruitful course of action at this point is for the state to take a deliberate policy position and focus on developing best management practices that cities can consider. If we went and we jumped ahead to a rulemaking process, which, you know, we're not necessarily signed off on doing that at any point, we think that might be a fruitful conversation in the future. But at this point, there are so many things moving around on the issue that it makes sense to really figure out what those best management practices would even look like in the first place. And so we're very interested in doing something on this. We're, you know, our simple position on the bill is that we're neutral. What we're hoping to be is supportive of the bill as drafted, based on, you know, you've heard discussion of POP 101, POP 107. We'd love to see those funded. The more simple consideration for this bill is to take a look at what would be required to implement it and talk with the agency, make sure those costs are funded, move all elements forward, and wildfire in a very deliberate fashion. Right. Thank you. Happy to answer questions.
Thank you, Mr. Kanzler. And with that, we'll call up Sean Gillian and Steve McCoy.
Of course. Why wouldn't the two of us testify together?
At least one of you is smiling.
We'll see after the testimony.
Let the chips fall where they may. Yeah. Chair Rayfield, members of the committee, I am Steve McCoy, representing 1,000 Friends of Oregon. Thank you for the opportunity to testify on this extremely important matter today. So we all remember in 2010 the earthquake in Haiti that killed more than 230,000 people, initially displaced 1.5 million more. 14 months later, an earthquake in Japan claimed almost 16,000 lives and cost approximately $300 billion. Also, of course, we have the landslide in Oso that has come up, and the $70 million that was spent by the Oregon Department of Forestry fighting wildfires in the summer of 2013. So these are natural hazards are things that we see throughout the world and are becoming kind of more and more in the news, I guess. But even on top of that, they are things that are impacting Oregon. So whenever the land use planning program was adopted in 1973, shortly thereafter, 19 goals were adopted by the Land Conservation and Development Commission to implement Senate Bill 100. Those 19 goals, many of them have been implemented in statute or rule now. There are, I think, three that are outstanding that have not been implemented in statute or rule. Goal 7 is one of those. Goal 7 is natural hazards. We feel like it's important. It's the time is here, the time is now to go ahead and implement this. So I've been with 1,000 Friends for 7 years. Over those 7 years, this rulemaking has been discussed many, many times. Putting it off will cost lives. The science will never be perfect. I would expect any rules to apply to mapped hazards, so incomplete mapping should not be an issue here. The rules will give local governments guidelines for implementing Goal 7 in their plans. This bill contemplates a 2-year rulemaking. It's not going to happen overnight. This is life or death, and we need to get moving now. One thing I wanted to address is that the rulemaking is not targeted to be completed until the end of the biennium. We have pledged as an organization to fight for funding for local governments in the next biennium for them to have grant money to be able to implement these in their plans. And I'm happy to take questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Jillians.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Sean Jillians today representing the Oregon Association of Realtors. Good conversation today, I think, about how we got to this point with the bill. And I was just going to sort of backtrack a little bit and talk about original conversations with the bill sponsors of what we were looking to accomplish with the bill, which was accurate identification of hazard areas. That was sort of where the bill started at. And I think when the bill originally came out, we had serious concerns with it. We were opposed and opposed pretty strenuously. So Representative Clem, Representative Leininger, and Representative Helm sort of spearheaded a work group where we could all get in a room many times early in the morning and sort of come up with amendments that we could all live with. Those conversations at times were heated. We weren't always smiling next to each other. But I think we got to something that we could all live with. It doesn't do everything that everyone wants, but I think it gives us enough comfort with where we got. The intent still remains what I went back to, which is sort of accurate identification of those hazard areas, and how do we mitigate the impacts? How do we help local governments mitigate the impacts? It's certainly not our intent in helping draft this amendment to prohibit development outright in potential hazard areas. That would have a significant impact on the coast, as well as any other place around a river or anything else or any place near a forest. And so I think you see the language is pretty clear in what we're looking at here. We look at the broader scope of natural hazards and the best planning practices, and we assist local governments in how we can do that. I agree with everyone else who's testified. $50,000 for a program to assist local governments is probably too little. And if I had my druthers, we probably would have put a little more in there, but it at least gets the conversation started in Section 1 about what those planning practices are. The area that we conceded a little bit is actually rulemaking, and that's in Section 2. I think what we agreed to as parties and legislators was, okay, we haven't had rulemaking on this particular goal. Let's have DLCD and LCDC focus on a few areas in the original rulemaking. And so you see in the bill what those areas are: coastal erosion, tsunamis, earthquakes. It sort of gives them a focus for the next couple of years of what the rulemaking will entail. It does not prohibit them in future session or future biennium from coming back with rulemaking and looking at other things, but I think it gives us a pretty good sense of what you, the legislature, is intending for them to look at this particular time around in the mandatory rulemaking phase. And I think that's important to put on the record of sort of how we got to those. Again, there are a number of provisions in the rulemaking as far as we're looking for safe harbors so the local communities know exactly what they're going to have to deal with. And one point on the voluntary Section 1, we have seen in the past, and it doesn't always occur, but we have seen in the past where we work on sort of aspirational safe harbors, and all of a sudden those become mandatory. The bill is very clear that safe harbors or best practices shall not become part of the mandatory program, because a lot of times we've seen sort of those goalposts move. So with that, Mr. Co-Chair, I wanted to thank Representative Clem for his leadership as well and his committee. I'm happy to answer any questions.
All right, thank you both. We'll go ahead and call up Mark Nystrom and Matt Krall. And again, we have 15 minutes to get through three bills.
Chair Rayfield, members of the committee, Mark Nystrom from the Association of Oregon Counties. I like it when Aaron Doyle goes first. I get to say what Aaron said to a lot of the issues. We have concerns about the rulemaking at this point because of the lack of and the cuts to the funds of the general fund grants, the POP 101. Again, as everyone has been saying, it's we need money to implement this stuff locally. Additionally, POP 107, the cuts to the technical assistance for natural hazards, we'd rather see those things funded in advance of creating new rules. One thing I want to remind you is that there are three counties submitted testimony to OLIS talking about what they're already doing and what these bills could potentially cost them. Another reminder is that FEMA already has a natural hazard mitigation plan that the coastal counties are implementing. Another reminder that I think as an AOC staff person I have to tell you is that counties are hurting financially. And, you know, implementing new rules in a county like Curry County, who is teetering on the brink constantly, it's going to be a really challenging situation. And again, as Representative Boone mentioned, they're preparing for a Cascadia subduction zone tsunami. Documentation is out, and we just haven't had enough time to implement those recommendations. A reminder is that our planning programs are fee-based, and as some of my colleagues in the back here, they would hate to hear us say that we would have to raise fees to implement some of these rules, and that's the reality of the situation. That or we would have to cut staff. Another thing that I want to bring up that no one has talked about yet is that there's two major federal programs that are swooping in on Oregon right now that will change much of the rules that we're talking about. Sage-grouse are listed, are potentially being listed by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. Right now, BLM is putting out new rules about wildfire. DLCD is working on rules. ODF and W are working on rules. All these things are going to impact the implementation of 2633, something that we need to keep in mind. Another issue that's going on is FEMA and NOAA Fisheries are going through the biological opinion process with the salmon and floodplains. Again, these issues are going to cause county planning departments to have to react and change. And the bottom line is that we have limited resources. The state has limited resources. We would really like to see these limited resources go towards improving our mapping, technical support, and not creating new rules. As Aaron recommended, I think we would really like to see DLCD go out there and assess what's already being done, which I think you'll find that a lot of these communities, counties and cities are already doing sufficient planning for natural disasters. They're all aware of the fact that if they're on the coast, coastal erosion and tsunamis are a big deal. So they're not ignoring that issue, and have DLCD create a model code that can help them implement. Thank you.
All right, Mr. Krall.
Good morning, Co-Chair Rayfield. In response to your concern, to try to be concise this morning, it might be convenient if I could have my colleague from the department join me, and we could talk about both bills at the same time, if that would be acceptable to you.
That would be great.
He didn't identify himself.
Okay, I'm sorry. We'll get Mr. Nystrom, thank you, and then we'll go ahead and go.
Mark, before he leaves.
Okay, and actually, Senator,
yes
if
no?
we could, okay, very quickly.
is AOC supportive or not or neutral?
AOC opposes both bills, but it's a nuanced opposition in that the emergency management part of AOC supports the emergency management components of Senate Bill 94.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay.
Chair Rayfield, members of the committee, this is Patty Snow. I'm the Ocean and Coastal Services Division Manager with GLCD.
Oh, please begin.
Yes. We'll start talking a little bit about House Bill 2633 and...
Yeah, and just identify yourself for the record.
Matt Kroll. I'm on the staff at the Oregon Department of Land Conservation and Development. My portfolio includes the natural hazards planning that goes on, and in which case, of course, I overlap quite a bit with the coastal areas that also have those natural hazards. We certainly appreciate the attention to natural hazards. It's an area that we have been putting more attention on in the department recently. And Goal 7 is a very important goal. I do want to talk about the idea of implementing Goal 7. Goal 7 has been implemented. Goal 7 by itself puts requirements on cities and counties to identify their hazards and to plan for them, and specifically calls out on floods that the National Flood Insurance Program is an appropriate way for cities to do that. And almost all of our cities in Oregon have joined the National Flood Insurance Program, and all of our cities have comprehensive plans in which they have addressed, at some level, natural hazards. It is true that there are not a set of rules associated with that, but it is not true that it has not been implemented. But talking about the program and the ways that we have tried to help cities with that, I want to give a couple of examples, because the House Bill 2633 would provide a $50,000 as a modest increment to increase our efforts on natural hazards in the programs. It mentions two specific types of areas that the program should cover, and one is the accurate identification of hazard areas. So I just provide an example for you. We are currently involved in a project with Dagami to look at streams and rivers statewide for the potential for channel migration, which is something that has not been well studied in the past. The study that they're producing right now will identify those areas where channel migration is most likely to happen, but will not precisely identify the hazard areas in which you might restrict development. And that's costing us somewhere in the range of $40,000 to $50,000 to do that statewide look. That's just a general. So I provide that as an example of the kinds of things that a $50,000 might do. Another example, Patty could talk to us briefly about the tsunami guide.
Members of the commission or committee and chair, I was very pleased to hear a number of folks refer to our land use guide that we recently prepared last year, preparing for a Cascadia subduction zone tsunami, a land use guide for Oregon coastal communities, and that we hired a consultant to help us with it, and it was really the first that anything like this has been done in the world. We looked everywhere we could, Japan, everywhere, to find something like it, and so we're very pleased with it, but it also cost about $50,000 to do this, and we are starting to work with local governments, anybody who will talk with us. Clatsop County right now, we were able to provide them some seed money to help them actually implement it into their plans, and they're doing that right now, so we're very pleased to be able to work with as many local governments as we can with this. Go ahead.
Turning from the program to the rulemaking part in Section 2 of House Bill 2633, there is no appropriation provided to provide funding for that, and that is a concern to the department. The rulemaking process, we certainly appreciate that when we do engage in rulemaking, we have representatives from cities and counties on our Rules Advisory Committee. We have representatives from the various advocacy groups. But we also invest a lot of staff time when you're working on a major rulemaking. And we have several other bills going on that would require rulemaking of the department, so we're trying to look at all of those together. I think that's all that I need to say about House Bill 2633. If you want to hear about House Bill 94 at this time also?
Very quickly.
Okay. Members of the committee, just wanted to add a few comments on Senate Bill 94. As I mentioned, we've created a land use planning guide, and we're working with local governments on that now. We believe that, you know, as others have testified, that each government, each local area is different, and so we're concerned about doing rulemaking right now. We feel that the best efforts that we can put forward are to work with the local governments up and down the coast, and ultimately perhaps do rulemaking that would that could be tailored to those communities. But we're working with them right now. We're working with Cannon Beach, with Seaside, with Clatsop County, and we're planning to reach out to as many communities as we can. So again, I know never folks have raised this. The local communities have raised this. The concern about rulemaking that one size doesn't fit all. That we're working with them right now to implement the guidance that we put forward. But we are very much committed to implementing as much as we can of the Oregon Resilience Plan and working with local communities to make them as resilient as we possibly can.
Thank you both very much, and we'll go ahead and call Dave Stuckey up on Senate Bill 94.
Good morning, Co-Chair Rayfield, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Dave Stuckey, Deputy Director of the Oregon Military Department. Previous to taking over this current job, I was the Director of the Office of Emergency Management and the Deputy Director for the Office of Emergency Management. There's three components to Senate Bill 94 that I'd like to address. First one is the price agreement for the heavy lift helicopter consortium piece. We recognize that helicopters are very, very critical in any type of emergency. The Oregon National Guard helicopters are used frequently for search and rescue and other avenues. We have been developing for the last several years the helicopter consortium coordination. There's some of the biggest companies in the nation are actually residing in Oregon, HDR, Columbia, Carson, and Ericsson. And so we've worked with this consortium to develop an aviation annex to help outline how we're going to put these pieces together following the Cascadia, as well as a pre-event contract. And so we're working with DAS right now on this pre-event contract. It's going to be it's basically going to be shouldered off of the call when needed list that ODF is using, and so we anticipate that we'll be able to exercise this these companies in any type of emergency, whatever the scale happens to be. Generally speaking, it's going to be a very, very large scale event if we call in these helicopters, because they're very, very expensive. As it applies to the Homeland Security coordination and the energy infrastructure, we did put an indeterminate fiscal on this. This is a little bit out of our lane as it applies to those liquid fuel farms in Linton. And so to be able to assess exactly how that works and what that total threat is, we anticipate that it would take a contract or something like that to ensure that we get this right. We're certainly in support of this. We're officially neutral on everything we want, but we wanted to see the energy infrastructure completed a little bit. And so those are basically the two components. I'm rushing into a little bit here to make certain we get it straight. The third component is applies to local planning. Good initiative. We anticipate and have expected, in emergency management, there's this ladder of assistance up and down. City shall, may, county shall, and so we support local planning initiatives from that standpoint. We've developed and have worked with DAGAMI and others over the past several years. We have a natural hazard mitigation plan that we worked on in support of with DLCD, and so from that standpoint, that local planning efforts will still continue in support of FEMA and some of the mitigation projects. And so that's basically it in a nutshell. With that, I'll answer any questions.
All right. Thank you very much. And with that, we'll go ahead and close our public hearings on Senate Bill 94 and 2633 and open up a work session on House Bill 3563.
I got here late. I make a quick statement on 2633.
At this point, we'll go ahead. We're running out of time, but we'll go ahead and if you keep it to a minute, we'll go ahead and reopen the work session on House Bill 2633.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Stephen Cafori. I represent the Oregon Land Use Planners Association. We're the folks that actually do this planning work, and we, like a lot of the folks in the room, testified if supporting the concept when the bill first came up, as saying there were a lot of problems in the initial draft, and we feel that those problems have been resolved in the latest amendments. Just to be brief and second what everyone else has said, as being the people who actually do this kind of work, we think $50,000 is not going to do it, and there's a real danger of making us think that we've accomplished something, and if we haven't put enough money out to do it, then we can kind of say, yeah, we sure took care of that one, and in fact, we haven't done anything. So I think we really need to take a second look at the funding to make sure that all the good talk results in action. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Cafori, and I apologize, we don't have more time. We'll go ahead and again close the work session. Public hearing on House Bill 2633. We've already got a work session open on House Bill 3563, and we'll turn it over to Ms. Turpin.
Chair Rayfield, members of the committee, House Bill 3563 increases the statutory limits on fees related to mining operations. It also establishes a fee for an exclusion certificate for small surface mining operations. The fee changes are anticipated to generate approximately $600,000 of other funds revenue in the biennium if they're increased to the maximum allowed by the statute, which I believe is the intent. You should have a copy of the memo, fiscal impact statement, and the staff measure summary. The fiscal impact statement does outline the type of fees, the previous amount, and the new fee amount. The fee revenue anticipated by this is included in the Dogami budget and Senate Bill 5512 that was passed earlier. The measure also does a couple other small changes. It stipulates where the revenues from these fees must go into a specific subaccount and requires the department to report to the governing board annually on that account. It also establishes the Reclamation Guarantee Fund, which is a fund to consist of monies deposited from surety bonds paid to the department for surface mining operations. And the department is directed to report on those, the financial status of that fund annually to the governing board as well.
All right, thank you. And we'll call up Mr. Angstrom really quickly. You can get, just kind of identify your position on the fee bill as you guys are.
Just two things I want to put on the record. My name's Rich Angstrom. I'm the president of the Oregon Concrete Aggregate Producers Association. The first thing is we're supportive of this fee bill. It should raise about $550,000 and help stabilize the MLR program. The second thing I need to put on the record is this takes care of the issue, at least for this cycle. We set the fee, and as we looked at the number, we set it a little bit high. And there is some additional language that we're going to be working on the interim, and this is the part I got to put on the record, that will actually go into the extra monies will go into the Dogami's reserve account that's within that bill. And where we need to go is, because we set the fees high, is an adjustment factor at some point that you just can't keep accumulating money in the reserve account until it just gets out of control. We're going to be working with Dogami in the interim to figure out where that line is and how that mechanism will be once we hit a number in the reserve account that stabilizes the department's funding source, that then we'll back down the fees so we just don't keep accumulating. I want to put that on the record because that's part of the agreement with the department that we have for supporting the fees and moving this issue forward. So with that, those are the two points I need to make and put on the record. I thank you for the opportunity to come up here and support the agency.
Thank you, Mr. Angstrom. Are there any quick questions? All right, seeing none, at this time we would accept the motion to move House Bill 3563 to the full committee with a due pass recommendation.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3563 to the full committee with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Clem has moved House Bill 3563 to the full committee with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, is there any objection to the motion? Seeing none, the motion carries. And then is there anyone who would like to carry this to full?
Of course. Have I ever denied you anything?
Representative Gomberg will carry it to the full on the floor, and then on the Senate side to the Senator Hansel will carry it to the floor on the Senate side. With that, we'll go ahead and close the work session on House Bill 3563, and we'll open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 912, and we'll turn it over to staff.
Looks like I'm clearing the room. Co-chairs, members of the committee, Senate Bill 912 clarifies the distinction between historically filled lands and new lands to determine ownership and transfer of ownership of lands created upon submersible or submerged lands by artificial fill or deposit. It authorizes the State Land Board to adopt by rule a process for Department of State lands to sell, lease, or trade historically filled lands owned by the state, and prohibits the board from asserting title in historically filled lands unless certain procedures are met. And it has an emergency clause and is an effective on passage. The fiscal impact of this would be for adopting rules and perform an inventory of historically filled lands, research ownership, identifying and digitizing historical land records, and provide notification to landowners.
The Department of State Lands has estimated this would cost approximately $410,333.1517 and $351,618 general fund in 1719. There is a blank appropriation in the general fund appropriation in the bill.
Thank you. We'll call Dave Honeycutt and Rich Angstrom.
Mr. Castelli from the DSL, come up and speak to the bill at the same time.
If there's three chairs, I don't have a problem.
All right.
Or you could just do Dave Honeycutt and Mr. Castelli. Whatever works. I'm not picky.
When do you guys end? 10 or 10:30?
Oh. We're out of here at 10.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Dave Honeycutt here in support of Senate Bill 912. This bill came out of the Senate Judiciary Committee on a 5-0 vote. It's the product of the Filled Lands Advisory Group, the flag group that was created in the interim and was staffed and run by the agency. The issue in this case deals with historically filled lands, which are lands that were created usually as a result of dredging activities in the late 1800s and early 1900s, as the Army Corps or ports were dredged the rivers and bays in order to deepen and widen the river channels, they'd need to find a place to dump the dredge spoils. Typically, what they do is they'd go on adjoining land that was submerged or submersible, dump the dredge spoils there, and create dry land. Over the years, there have been a series of title conflicts between the upland owner and the state, and the ownership of those areas has been really unclear. The legislature has tried to deal with this issue in the 60s and 70s, but to no avail. This bill, I believe, finally resolves those title issues. It's the title of these properties is really a hot potato as the land gets passed from property owner to property owner. You never know. And in many cases, most property owners have no idea that the state asserts a claim to a portion of their property until they receive a letter at some point in time. And then the current process just leads to litigation. This bill, along with rules that the state land board is working on, will streamline that process, get all the owners notified, resolve the title issues, and do so in a manner that really speeds things up. It's a great bill, resolves a long-standing issue, and is one of those bills where everyone benefits. So we would urge the committee to forward this to the full Ways and Means and adopt the bill.
Thank you very much.
Well, good morning, Co-Chair Rayfield and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Chris Castelli, and I'm a policy analyst at the Department of State Lands. I was fortunate enough to staff the Filled Lands Advisory Group, and I can't say enough about the work they did. You have Director Abrams' written testimony in OLS and the flag recommendations document. I'll be happy to answer any questions about it, but I'll try to be brief here. So to get to the chase, after working successfully with the flag to reach a set of consensus recommendations, the Department of State Lands is pleased to support the substantive statutory changes proposed in Senate Bill 912. It does a lot of clarification and actually a lot of streamlining. So we think the policy part is a great part of the bill. We do need to note that Senate Bill 912 funding is outside of the governor's recommended budget, and therefore the department is neutral on the appropriation request. I'll be happy to answer any questions, though, you have with regards to the flag work and the recommendations. So thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning. Rich Angstrom again from OCAPA. I think the way I'm going to do my testimony real quick is just give you an example from a tour that Caddy and Arnie and Dave and I did over the summer to look at one of these particular issues. And what's interesting about it is the impact actually is on commerce and development of waterways, and it's actually resolving this, I think, will free up some economic activity. So that's the point I want to drive home. When we were on tour, I'm going to leave the company's name nameless. We looked at the data that went all the way back to like the early 1880s, and it was actually not the Army Corps. It was actually the Army then that was out here that actually did the filling activity, and so, you know, it got passed on to a private individual in prime location, and six or seven landowners down the road, it lands in one of my company's ownership. And they're wanting to develop it. It's a perfect spot for developing commerce on the coast, but they have an unclear title. And so they've gone back, they've looked at all of that. We actually think in this case we have a pretty good argument that the fill happened before statehood and the transfer happened. But when you go back that far, it's really uncertain about how that's going to play out. And one of the nice things is the agency have always looked at the strength of their case in assessing how they're how much they charge the owners once adjudicate it. But the point is that I want to make in support of this is, even though for the most part this deals with the de minimis claims that are out there, the smaller ones. The universe of all the claims, including the larger ones, which I suspect will involve my industry more, will be a known universe within a period of time, and we can move towards resolution. This thing has been going. If you look at the statutory arguments and discussion, goes back in the 60s, 70s, and 80s fighting over this issue. And this is the first major step in addressing that and finding some resolution and clearing up title for quite a number of folks. So we, OCAPA, would ask this committee to support this bill and move it on to the full committee and pass it through the both chambers.
All right. Thank you. We have a few minutes. I want to apologize to the committee for having to rush through everything and not being able to get to the questions. I think the beginning testimony took longer than I was anticipating. Is there any questions from the committee members? I'll just ask one. Is there an adverse possession claim against the state? Can someone do that? I mean...
Yeah, Co-Chair Rayfield, the answer to that is no, which is one of the reasons why one of the reasons for the need for this bill is to identify and get these resolved. If there was, then there would have been a series of lawsuits over the last century adjudicating that issue. But you can't adversely possess against the state. I would note also that, and I don't know if it's in all of your packets, but I believe that the two co-chairs of the full have a letter from the Coastal Caucus indicating, signed by all the Coastal Caucus members, indicating support for this bill and urging the full to pass it out and send it to the floor.
All right. Thank you very much. All right, with that, seeing no other questions, we'll go ahead and close the public hearing on Senate Bill 912 and adjourn the meeting.